Parents, do you ever wonder if your kids are getting all the nutrition they need? One simple way to know is to give them 3 servings of dairy milk per day. Milk is wholesome, it's naturally nutrient-rich, it comes fresh from the farm, and has high-quality protein. Did you know that 1 out of 2 kids doesn't get enough calcium, vitamin D, or potassium? Milk is one of the best sources for these essential nutrients. The American Academy of Pediatrics encourages dairy milk at most meals and water in between. So help give your kids the nutrition they need and serve milk at mealtime. It is a good source of high-quality, natural protein, and milk is a protein that's naturally occurring. Learn more at pourmoremilk.com. That's pourmoremilk.com.
For 30-plus years, I've seen every type of child grow up.
Instead of giving me what I wanted, she gave me what I needed, which was truth.
Don't let emotions win. Let truth win.
Do your very best, and you should have a lot of fun while you do it. And the better you get at something, the more fun you're going to have at something.
You moms and dads are wired with everything you need to be a parent to a great kid.
Welcome to Parenting Great Kids. This is episode number 71, and I'm your host, Dr. Meg Meeker. Today, my guest is best-selling author, Dr. Kevin Lehman. Dr. Lehman is an internationally known psychologist, humorist, and the New York Times best-selling author of Have a New Kid by Friday. He's author of 36 books, including The Birth Order Book, Have a New Husband by Friday, and When Your Kid is Hurting, Helping Your Child Through the Tough Days. He is a former consulting psychologist for Good Morning America and is a frequent guest on national media, including Fox and Friends and The Early Show. He and his wife, Sandy, live in Tucson, Arizona. They have 5 children and 2 grandchildren. As always, I'm going to share my points to ponder for you to start using right away. And parents, as a reminder, don't just download the episodes, click subscribe, because when you do that, you are joining my parenting revolution, and every new episode will automatically show up in your subscribed list. You won't regret it. And we'd love for you to write us a review on iTunes. Let me know what you think. Also, not only are we on iTunes, but the Parenting Great Kids podcast is available on Google Play Store and on Stitcher. So no matter where you get your podcast, subscribe today. You won't want to miss a single episode. And friends, remember, if you are sick of hearing your kids argue, of your kids not listening to you, or you're feeling that life at home is out of control, check out my new course, Discipline with Courage and Kindness. It's at MegMeekerMD.com. You'll love it. Parents, thanks for listening. This is episode number 71. Stay with us. I want you now to listen in on a conversation I had with Dr. Kevin Lehman. I know you're really going to enjoy it. My guest is Dr. Kevin Lehman, and today we're going to talk about his brand new book, When Your Kid is Hurting, Helping Your Child Through the Tough Days. Dr. Lehman, thanks so much for coming on my podcast.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. I know who you are. You've done great things. I think you did a book with my friend Bill Bennett's wife, right? Am I thinking right or thinking
yes,
wrong?
Yes, I have. Elaine Bennett. Yeah, she's a great friend. She's a great lady.
They are wonderful people.
Wonderful. Very hardworking, wonderful people. Well, this book is a toughie. And as a pediatrician, I have seen a rise in anxiety and depression in kids. And as a speaker and psychologist, you've seen a rise. And this is really bothering a lot of parents and worrying them. Why do you think the anxiety and depression in teens and young kids has been on the rise in the past 10 years?
Well, I'm surprised you don't put helmets on kids at birth, tell you the truth, Meg.
Yeah.
I think we have been so overprotective with kids. We've made kids feel like they're the absolute center of the universe. Mm-hmm. And I'm not that smart, but I know that's not good for kids. And
right.
We have created a group of children who are soft, They haven't dealt with the realities of life. They haven't been given responsibility in the home. We've coddled them. And I think when reality sets in and kids don't have the skill sets to deal with the peer group, the viciousness of the peer group, life itself, disappointments, they choose to be anxious. They go under.
Yeah.
And we medicate them. And I'm not a physician. You are. But I'm not a big medication guy. I think we medicate kids way, 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 way too much.
One of the things I'm concerned about is I see depression and anxiety in younger and younger kids. I mean, I've seen seven-year-olds with anxiety. And I think the response of many parents is they see anxiety and depression and they kind of freak out and they bring their kids to a psychologist, a counselor, pediatrician, and they say, fix it, when in reality, there's a lot that parents can do to help their kids with anxiety. So rather than to look to somebody else and go, please help, this is horrible, to turn to the child and say, well, let's figure it out. You know, let's figure it out. We can do this here. And I know that many parents seem afraid. I know even one of my young daughters is married and said, Mom, I just don't know if I should have kids. The world is such a hard, hard place. I said, you know what, honey? I thought the exact same thing, you know, 35 years ago when I started raising kids. Why do you think parents are so afraid of not just their children, but of the culture out there and what's going to come at their kids?
Well, they have reason to be afraid. It's a scary culture. We have five kids. So we had our original three, and then we had the surprise at age 42, and then we had the shocker at 48. That's a whole nother
That is a shocker.
By the way, ladies, when you have a baby at 48, there is absolutely no reason to push. It's hachoo! What a beautiful daughter. But I digress. But it is scary, and I agree. I see seven-year-old children who are anxious, and I'm thinking, why should a seven-year-old kid suffer from any kind of anxiety? It seems to me that ought to be the la-la land of life. It ought to be play and fun. And I have created some schools, some charter schools called Lehman Academy of Excellence. The one thing I insist on at our schools is that we have fun in school. And we also put authority in classroom teachers' hands. Well, what does that say? It means that kids actually thrive with authority, not authoritarianism. There's a difference. But so kids appreciate guidelines. And parents today, I mean, I just got a note from a young parent today just once again saying, thank you for helping us clueless parents, because so many of them are afraid to stand up and be the parent they need to be. And kids want to please parents. That's late breaking news. A lot of parents don't realize it. Let the kids please you. Let them give back to the family. Let them work. Your 11-year-old pays the bills in your family. That's a great suggestion. And they can do it online better than you can, parent. And what a wonderful way to teach an 11-year-old how much it costs to run a family today.
Right.
My encouragement to parents is, hey, you can do it just like your sweet mom and dad did it.
One of the things that I see with parents, and I think this is what puts a lot of heat on their kids, is that parents are extremely competitive with one another. And from what I've seen is this, you know, parents feel they need to have their child be the best soccer player so that he's better than their friends. They need to help him create a portfolio from the time he's 7 or 8 so he can get into the best high school, get into the best college. And I think that sometimes kids feel overwhelmed with performing well enough for their parents. And even though parents will say, oh yeah, he just plays soccer for fun, the reality is he really doesn't. He really feels that in order to please his parents, he needs to hyper-perform. Have you had a similar experience or something different?
Every day. We had an eighth grade parent pull a kid out of school 3 weeks short of eighth grade graduation so he could play basketball again as an eighth grader and help him get in the NBA. Ugh. I mean, how stupid is stupid? I mean, it's amazing the lengths the parents will go. They're highly competitive. One of the things, if people have followed Lehman books, I always underscore if you want to be helpful to your kids, your family, to your husband, to your wife, realize how imperfect you are. And don't be afraid to share your imperfection. Think of people you're drawn to, adults. Are you drawn to people who have all life's answers in their back pocket? Or do you like down-to-earth people who tell it like it is?
Right.
And so I err on the side of trying to make the complex simple, but I think life is a lot simpler, Meg, than we're making it out to be.
Amen. I wholeheartedly agree with you. In your book, you write about the top 10 principles for handling life's hurts well. Can you talk about what some of those principles are?
Well, they're very simple things. I don't have them in front of me. In fact, I'll show you how good of a guy I am on a podcast. I don't have my book within reach, but they're simple things like, you know, teaching responsibility and listening to children and establishing that life isn't always fair. And there are situations in life, there's people in life that will hurt you. There's, you know, it's just sort of a bare-boned approach that as parents, we give kids what I call vitamin E, which is encouragement. And we're brave enough to tell them, no, that's vitamin N. And we have a balanced approach to rearing kids. And I think when you do that, you end up, quite frankly, with a pretty well-balanced kid who can face the adversaries in life in the peer group. And I think what makes my book sort of unique is if you think, parent, for a minute about what you would say to your kid when your kid is really hurting, think of the words you would say. Oh, honey, it's going to be okay. Oh, honey, don't worry about it. Honey, are you sure you're not imagining that? Honey, don't worry. I'll take care of that for you. All those things are destructive with your kid. And so teaching a parent, first of all, to listen to your kid when they're hurting. Because when you give them one of those, oh, honey, don't worry about it, the kid's thinking, wait a minute. I'm sharing my deepest feelings with these people who say they love me more than anything in this earth. And they just blew me off, and they're not the ones being called pizza face at school. So again, when I say this was a tough book to do, it's a tough book to do because as a parent, you have to sort of reframe your responses to your children when they come to you and they're hurting. Because if you follow your initial parental gut level, you'll say and do the wrong thing.
That's a great point. Let's get specific. You know, one of the things that I've seen with regard to girls in particular in social media, and we are having studies now showing that girls who use social media heavily are at much higher risk for depression. But let's say your 13-year-old comes to you and says, Dad, I'm really upset because a lot of my quote unquote friends on social media are saying bad things about me and it really hurts. What should I do? What would you tell that 13-year-old daughter?
Well, I can be specific. My 13-year-old daughter recently told me that she had X number of likes on her Facebook. And she said, isn't that good, Grandpa? And I said, no, it's not good. And let me tell you why it's not good. Do you really want to be like everybody else in life, Adeline?
Mm-hmm.
No. Then, you know, everybody's not always going to like you. The idea isn't to get a bunch of likes. The idea is to figure out who you are at 13, what kind of a person you want to be. There are people out there in life, and in your example, who will say mean and nasty things to you. You have to understand, in cyberspace, once you hit that button, it's out there. Mm-hmm. That little innocent 13-year-old girl parent is very capable of taking pictures of her private parts and sending it to this 15-year-old who is shown an inordinate amount of attention to your 13-year-old daughter or granddaughter.
Mm-hmm.
Why could something like that happen? You brought up this kid to do the right thing. You've taken them to church or synagogue, and you've trained them up with moral. How could that happen? It happens because the power of the peer group and the need for a kid to fit in. And there's all kinds of studies where even where kids see in black and white that one figure is longer than the other. When the other people who were in cahoots with the experimenters put their hand up in the air and say, the second line is the longest line, even though it's not. In 3/4 of the cases, the kid will put his hand skyward and say, yes, just to belong to that group. So you cannot downplay, parent, how important that new Goliath is. And the new Goliath in the year 2018, 2019 is, guess what? The cell phone. And you're not going to beat the cell phone, and you're not going to beat social media. So you have to be on top of what's going on with your kids and social media, but you have to talk from your heart, and you have to talk turkey to your kids about such things.
Parents, I hope you're enjoying my conversation with Dr. Kevin Lehman. We need to take a quick break, but don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with more of my conversation with Dr. Kevin Lehman. Parents, this year, you can be the best gift giver in your family by giving Aura. Aura makes gorgeous, living room worthy smart frames that help families stay in touch seamlessly. By marrying high end design with cutting edge technology, Aura's smart frame will fundamentally change the way you experience photography. These aren't your typical cheap plastic digital frames. They're stunning designs featuring an ultra-high definition display and unlimited free photo storage, so you never run out of space. Aura even automatically creates collections of photos with the people you love the most, furry friends included, and uses machine learning to choose the best quality photographs from your camera roll. Everyone in the family can contribute to an Aura frame from anywhere in the world with their smartphone app that lets you easily update pictures in real time. And when you give Aura as a gift, you can preload photos while it's still in the box. Your lucky recipient simply needs to open it, plug it in, and enjoy. Friends, I use Aura frames, and honestly and truly, I have never seen anything that is so beautiful, that has such lovely design, and is so easy to use. Aura frames actually make the photos that I put into them look better. Who in your family would love to receive Aura as a holiday gift? Go to auraframes.com and use the code MEG to get $50 off your order. That's Aura, A-U-R-A frames.com, code MEG for $50 off. Can we really combat peer pressure? Because I know that kids so desperately want the acceptance of their friends. And I know a lot of parents say, well, you know, don't cave to peer pressure, that kind of thing. But I think sometimes we really underestimate how powerful peer pressure is. So how does a parent really combat that? Is it through talking to your kids? Is it through listening to your kids? Is it through pulling your kids away from their friends?
Well, I think the surprise answer is you can combat that. And you combat that very uniquely. Here's the question for you parents. Are you rearing your child in a home or hotel? I think most of you rear your kids in hotels. But what does that mean? It means you give them room service, food service, and very little expected of them. Kids need to feel like they belong. Okay, they need to feel accepted for who they are. Do you treat your kids differently? Do you have different bedtimes in your family for different age kids, different allowances? Does everybody in your family give back to the family? Does everybody work? See, the kid who feels a part of his family, there's your inoculation right there. And the stronger you can make your family and the more comfortable your kid is in their home. And by the way, is your home the centerpiece of your kid's social life? I think it should be. Mm-hmm. That means, yes, it's going to cost you money to feed the peer group. If we're talking about boys, eat like pigs and horses. You're going to be broke. But I'd rather have them in my home. And our home was always that way. I have 5 kids, by the way. Currently, none of them are in jail, which we're very proud of. What I'm saying, some of this is tongue in cheek, but I want you to see, parents, it's the relationship that you have with your kids. It's the belief you have in them. I always say when you see a turtle on a fence post, you know he didn't get there by himself. Well, who believed in you, parent? You know, think about who was that person who believed in you? How did Meg Meeker get to where she is today? I got news for you. She had people who had her back. Right. Well, you get these kids and they're different, and some of them get mouthy, and they're certainly different. I wrote the birth order book. That'll prove that point. But yeah. Parent, it's about you and your relationships and your belief and your belief in your kids. And when you believe in your kids, even when they're doing things they shouldn't be doing, listen to this, they feel guilty. And guilt, believe it or not, guilt gets bashed a lot in our society. Guilt can be a good thing.
Yeah, it's very motivating.
Absolutely. It's for women who tend to be the guilt gatherers of life, it can be very destructive. And guilt is the propellant for most of the lousy decisions you will make as a parent. I guarantee you that.
We have a lot of families where you've got both mom and dad working. Sometimes both are working full time. Is it possible for them, and I know it's a really, really touchy subject, but is it possible when they're spending, you know, just evenings and weekends with their kids to have close relationships? And if so, how? Because if you're talking about the family being the inoculation against, you know, peer pressure and other things, how do you do that? You know, if you're a single mom or if you're a married mom and you know, everybody's working outside the house, what advice do you have for those parents?
Well, number one, I would limit activities for kids. I wrote a book called It's Your Kid, Not a Gerbil. It didn't sell, Meg. It's like spitting in the wind.
Right. Nobody wants to admit their child's in trouble.
Everybody wants their kids in activities. It gets back to what you said earlier about the competitiveness of parents today. And it's crazy what we do in the name of loving our kids. Marshalling kids who are good soccer players or good softball players and encompassing the entire weekend with sports is crazy. It makes no sense whatsoever. But again, you go on Good Morning America and give 6 minutes of that. They look at you like you got a screw loose because everybody knows activities are good for children. I think activities are destructive for children.
Yeah.
And I think one activity per kid is plenty. And so parents, you have the purse strings in the family. For those of you who are both working, you have to be very judicious about how you spend your time. And family time is tough. It's tough to cut out for the single parent. I have such empathy for those people. I don't know how they do it. I really don't. Mm-hmm. It's tougher than tough. But it gets back to the degree of the relationship, the authenticity and the honesty in the relationship you have with each of those kids. Yeah. Does both parents working help? No, it hinders. But given the state of our society today, is something you have to deal with. So you deal with it as best you can.
You know, I wholeheartedly agree with you. And I think that one of the things that's woefully underestimated in importance is, you know, time with our kids. And that whenever we sign them up for something, we're sacrificing our time with them. And, you know, the sad truth, well, not, I don't know if it's a sad truth, but 99% of the kids graduate from high school and either they get jobs, they go on to college, and they do none of this stuff. They don't figure skate and they don't play soccer and they don't do this. So they give it up. But what they have given up, what parents have turned over, is tremendous amount of time with their kids, and their kids lose out. And I think as parents, we need to understand that. You talk about in your book that there are times when parents should step in and help our kids, and there are times that we hold back and not help our kids. How do you help distinguish those?
It's a judgment call, Meg. It really is, because kids will work you.
Yes.
I can quote myself. We've seen the enemy, and they are small, and they're unionized. And they have a game plan. They can work you. They can punch your buttons up. And part of it is just knowing who you are as a parent, when to step in and help. Mm-hmm. Do we want to help our kids when they're hurting? Yeah. But sometimes you help them best by just listening to them and walk them through the steps, choosing your words carefully. And that's why I think people, this is a book that people will read. And then they'll go back and they'll pull it off the shelf and say, I got to get that straight again. What do I do again? Because it's tough. It's a tough judgment call. And every kid's different and every situation is different. But the kid has to feel like I'm making the choice. For example, best friends forever. Okay, you got these three 13-year-old girls, 12-year-old, 11-year-old girls, pubescents. They're the best buddies ever. And all of a sudden, your daughter is odd man out, and she doesn't want to go to school. What do you do, parent? I'll tell you what I'd tell her. I'd tell her, honey, I know you don't want to go to school. But for the record, you are going to school tomorrow. But I'm 30 years older than you are, and I just want to run one suggestion by you, and you can accept it, modify it, reject it. But tomorrow, when you go to school, at lunch, I want you to walk in the cafeteria. I want you to find somebody who's sitting by themselves. I want you to sit across from them, extend your hand, introduce yourself to them, tell them you've never had the privilege of meeting them. Then I want you to tell me tomorrow night how that felt inside. In other words, parents, you can empathize with kids. You can feel the hurt, but you have to have something in your parental toolbox to give them to take back to the peer group. You know, your kid is called fat by somebody. And by the way, that's not bullying. That's just an unkind statement. You're fat. Give your kid a pocket answer. Oh, I was just at the doc this week. He said the same thing. He said, Timothy, you're too fat. I said, I want a second opinion. He said, you're ugly too. I mean, equip your kids with some things that keep the peer group at bay. If you don't, they'll chew you up. I mean, I've written books on the subject, and you know an awful lot about teenagers, and you know how tough that and vicious that peer group can be. And so you can't stand in front of them. You can't snowplow the roads of life for them. And by the way, you don't do your kids' homework ever. We have parents that do that by the ton load.
Or their art projects or their science projects.
Yeah. Well, the parents do them. Hey, would you kids turn that music down? I'm trying to finish your homework.
Right. Well, I will tell you, as a parent and watching your child struggle and write really stupid things in their composition, it's really tempting to jump in, but you can't. You just can't. You've got to let your child write his paper, go to school, get the C, and then figure out the next time how to get the B, because failure is a critically important life lesson for kids to go through. We only have a few minutes left, and I have, you know, just one more final question for you as we talk about your amazing book, When Your Kid Is Hurting, Helping Your Child Through the Tough Days. You know, we hear a lot about helicopter parents and parents who are overprotective. And you talk about the difference between being overprotective and protective. How can parents know they're being protective in a healthy way and not overprotective? Where's that fine line?
Well, when you find yourself speaking for your child or making excuses for your child's behavior or trying to fix things, you're being an enabler, okay? Mm-hmm. You're not being a good parent. If you're a helpful parent, you're going to be compassionate. You're going to be affirming. You're going to stay calm. You're going to learn to respond rather than react. And that's a tough one for most of us. And you're going to be authentic and tell your kid the truth. And sometimes the truth hurts. And sometimes, I've said many times, the home needs to be a place where kids learn to fail. You've been listening to a man who graduated fourth in his class in high school. Unfortunately, it was fourth from the bottom and not fourth from the top. I got thrown out of Cub Scouts, got in college on probation, got thrown out of college by a dean of students, and 10 years later, I was a dean of students. So I've lived that life, and I can tell you that vitamin E, that encouragement that came from Mom Lehman and Dad Lehman many years ago is what helped me turn my life from a loser path to a winner path. I can tell you that. Yeah. So you count, parents, and the words that you say to your kids are huge.
And encourage them to know that they can do things on their own, that they don't always need you to do them. I see a lot of young adults in their early 20s still relying on mom in particular to do things because mom needs to be needed. So I think we have to be really careful as mothers to recognize that we need to pull back, particularly with our boys, and say, you know what? You got this. I'm out.
Yeah. Mommies need to remember what great psychological imprint they put on their sons and daddies to their daughters. Those are really important relationships that need to be underscored and nourished as best as we learn together about this thing called life.
Well, Dr. Lehman, it has been a pure pleasure having you on our podcast. And your book is awesome. It's timely. I wish I had it 10 years ago to help my own patients. When your kid is hurting, helping your child through the tough days. Congratulations on writing such a fabulous book. I hope it is your bestseller, even though I'm a real fan of birth order book. But I really appreciate you coming on and encouraging parents today how to help our kids get through a very tough world.
Well, my pleasure, Meg. Let's do it again sometime.
I would love to. Here now are my points to ponder. First, pay close attention to your kids. You know, many times our kids are hurting and we don't notice. We think they're just being ornery or defiant. But remember, when kids are hurting or depressed, their pain comes out sideways. In other words, kids grieve differently than adults do. We'll cry, we'll close ourselves off or retreat from friends and loved ones, or we may go the other direction and reach out to friends. Kids, especially boys, don't do this. They act out. They may suddenly begin to yell. Their grades may drop, or they won't get along with their friends. Kids grieving divorce will act out against the parent whom they feel hurt them the most. But this will change as time goes by. So the next time your child suddenly changes from being a happy kid to a defiant one, make sure that you figure out what's bothering them. Second, reach out. Once you see that your child is hurting, move closer to him. Many times we see our child is hurting, we don't know what to do, they're acting out, and we think, oh, they don't want us anymore, and we pull back. That's the very worst thing you can do. Move in closer to your child. This doesn't mean that you should badger him about what's wrong, because most kids don't know what's wrong, and even if they do, they can't articulate it. So spend more time with your child. Stay calm and kind and ask a few simple questions like, you know, I've noticed you're not quite yourself lately. What do you think could be going on? And listen without interrupting or teaching. Do this repeatedly, and over time, I promise your child will open up, and then you can help him solve his hurt. Third, don't get mad. Often parents get frustrated and angry when they see their kids are hurting. This is because they feel they can't fix the problem. We feel that as parents, we should be able to fix any problem our kids have and find a solution and then help them implement the solution. But this doesn't always work when your child is grieving. So you have to be patient and resist getting frustrated and angry with your child because maybe they're pulling away from you. Maybe they're acting defiant. Don't get angry. What your child needs is patience and understanding, not impatience and frustration from you. All right, parents, it's time to get social. I want to hear from you and I want to interact with you. You can connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Meg Meeker, MD, or if you have a question, send it to askmeg at megmeekermd.com. That's askmeg at megmeekermd.com. Today, I have a question from Justin, who writes, thanks so much for the opportunity to ask your advice. I've read Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters, and it was tremendously helpful. I'm struggling with something that I could really use your help on. What tips do you have for parents struggling with defiant behavior? Our 5-year-old daughter has been displaying defiant behavior lately and is more frequently not doing what we ask of her. She's a very sweet and academically bright child, and this is not like her. When we ask her to do something or to stop doing something, she starts ignoring us until either my wife or I lose our cool. We're also concerned that this is affecting our 2.5-year-old child. Well, Justin, I want to tell you that many years ago, I coined something termed the kindergarten meltdown syndrome. What I have seen over the years is that during the fall of the kindergarten year, and I don't know if your daughter's in kindergarten, but she's around that age, or the first time a child enters school full time, their personality changes. They go from being lovely kids to monsters. And what happens is this. First, they're exhausted. They don't get enough sleep or downtime. This is particularly true for kids who have to go to sports, piano, etc. after school. And second, after spending 8 hours at school trying to concentrate and behave, they come home and let down. They lose control like a volcano erupting. Here's what I recommend you do. Make sure that your daughter has some quiet time and some downtime during her day. Believe it or not, some kindergartners even need a nap. Don't let her do any outside activities after school until you see her mood change. Also, make her go to bed earlier. You can't believe how much nicer kids are when they get enough sleep. The bottom line is that it's hard to tell if your daughter is having a kindergarten meltdown syndrome or if she's really defiant. So you need to give it time. And time will tell, but I'll bet you by next summer or sooner, you'll see your old daughter return. My next question is from Kristen. Kristen said, I know I'm a little behind, but I heard your podcast on gender identity issues. I want to say thank you for touching on such a sensitive subject. I have a daughter who's 17. She told me about 2 years ago that she felt gender fluid. Within the last year, she has now said she's transgender. Up until seventh grade, she was a normal girl, not even a tomboy. In seventh grade, she said she was a lesbian. Then she said, well, I'm not a lesbian, I'm bisexual. In the ninth grade, she had a long-term boyfriend. At the end of their relationship, she said that she was transgender. Now, at 17, she's planning to start her reassignment when she's 18. This is so scary to me. Even still, sometimes she gets all dolled up in makeup. How or what can I do to help her before she makes changes that could affect her the rest of her life? Well, Kristen, you're in a very tough situation, but I encourage you, don't freak out. Clearly, your daughter's really confused about who she is. True transgender kids know that something is different with them when they're very young. The fact that your daughter keeps changing her mind tells you she's experimenting. Here's what I would do. First, rather than make this a gender identity issue or a sexual orientation issue, I would approach her and say that you're concerned that she's struggling with some feelings that are deep and that she needs to figure out what those are. Talk to her about your concerns about what's going on beneath the changes. Ask her questions and listen to her answers without lecturing her. If she knows that you're empathetic and you're not going to lecture her, she'll keep talking to you. She won't talk about what's going on now because she knows that you want to change her mind, which is true, and I don't blame you. Ask if she's struggling with depression or self-doubt. Ask her about her relationships with kids at school. You know, there are many kids who want to transition because they think it's cool to get attention, and they're really are kids who want to transition because it's a fad. After you've established better communication, tell her that you support her. But before she transitions, she needs to know a few things. She needs to be 100% sure that this is what she really wants and that being a man is what she believes down deep is true. Point out the fact that she keeps changing her mind and that makes you concerned that she hasn't arrived at that point yet of knowing that she's certain she wants to be a man. Also, tell her that once she transitions, she gives up her ability to have children. She will become infertile. Tell her that the transition will not be reversible and ask her if she's ready to be a man when she's 40, 50, and 60. Tell her in a matter-of-fact manner. Finally, encourage her to wait until she's at least 23 or 24 to make a decision. This is a very reasonable request since the medications and surgery are permanent. And at 23, 24, she'll have the capacity to make a better lifelong decision. So ask her to pause and give herself time. If she really wants to become a man, That's not going to change over the next 7 or 8 years. Chances are excellent that this time will help her understand her true beliefs. Remember to communicate to her that your love for her will never change regardless of the decisions she makes. That gives her tremendous freedom not to feel defensive. Finally, find some women friends who can support you and keep you from exploding with anxiety. This is really tough stuff. But as I said before, never parent out of fear, but out of strength. Kristen, you can do this. Parents, you know I love answering your questions, so please keep sending them in to me. You can email me any parenting question to askmeg at megmeekermd.com. Again, askmeg at megmeekermd.com. I want to thank my guest, Dr. Kevin Lehman. Make sure you check out his website at drlehman.com. Once again, that's Dr. Lehman, LEMAN.com. He's also on Facebook and Twitter. Just search for Dr. Kevin Lehman on your internet browser. Now, let's recap my points to ponder. 1, pay close attention to your kids. 2, reach out. And 3, don't get mad. So until next time, parents, always remember that great kids are raised, not born.
Hey, this is Bobby, producer of Meg Meeker's Parenting Great Kids podcast. We hope you've enjoyed listening to episode 71, When Your Kids Hurt. And thanks to you, Dr. Meg's parenting revolution has grown to over 2 million downloads. You can like Dr. Meeker on Facebook and follow her on Twitter and Instagram at Meg Meeker MD. As a reminder, go to megmeekermd.com and sign up for her newsletter for giveaway opportunities and updates. And don't forget to share the podcast, write us a review, and click subscribe so you won't miss an episode.